It really is. I mean, that's what our lives are supposed to be. Sarah and I talk about it all over the world. Your life and mine is supposed to be lived in this ongoing conversation between grace and faith. Grace is everything God has spoken to you, and faith is the only appropriate response to it. You know who I learned that from? My three-month-old. Actually, he was probably about 6 months old at the time, I guess. He's now 6 years old. He'll be here tonight running around. I hope you get to meet him. Little Justice. Sarah and I have two little kids. Justice, James, he's six, almost seven. Jesse Grace, she's three. But just after Justice was born, one thing really stood out to me about him. The kid spoke nearly no English. Like right when he was born. Like no English at all. And as much as I wanted him to just tell me, buddy, just say the words that you want me to know and to understand. What you're going through right now, I want to fix it. And as a new dad, that's all I wanted, especially at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I just wished that he could just say it. Just say, you know, I'm hungry. Just say it and I will fix it, whatever we can do to fix it. At one point, I just wanted to be able to talk. I just wanted to know where the TV remote was. That's just tell me what you did with it. That would be progress in our life and family. But, you know, several months after he was born, you know, those first few days, weeks, months, whatever, it was just a lot of squeaks. It was a lot of grunts. It was a lot of cries. But no English, no words. Until one day, we were in the kitchen. Sarah was feeding him. And out of nowhere, you know what my son said? Dada. My boy said, Dada. You know what I mean? It was over for me. I mean, it was one of the greatest moments of my life. I said, what'd you say? Dada, dada, dada. Say it again. Dada, dada, dada. I just wanted to hear him say it and say it and say it. And not long after that, Sarah and I were taking him on a walk around the neighborhood, pushing him in the stroller. You know, sometimes the Lord can just speak to you just like he will to anybody, just down on the inside. And he said, you want to know why it pleases you so much to hear your son say that? I said, why? And he said, it's because your son is learning to speak your language. And just in a moment of time, my heart ran to Hebrews 11:6, without faith, it's impossible to please God. And it came all over me how much the Father must love it and must enjoy it when we, his children, actually learn to speak his language. Because when you're praying in fear and praying in doubt and it's just worry on your mind coming out of your mouth all the time, that's nothing but, and your father's going, come on, baby, use my words. And if all you know to do is say, Dada, and say it in faith, he'll respond to it. And you go back through the word and you find out, look, at time after time after time, every person who got their life changed in the middle of this conversation between grace and faith. Grace has spoken. Grace said, I loved you. Grace said, I have saved you. Grace said, I have healed you. Grace said all of these things to you, but he's waiting on a response. For two people to have any success in a conversation whatsoever, then at some point they're going to have to speak the same language. None of this is my message, so it must be important. If you and I are going to get anywhere in a conversation with each other, if we're going to get anything done, get anything accomplished, we're going to have to speak the same language. You guys are a lot like us in Texas. We're really close to Mexico. And so we have a large Hispanic population, just like you do here in Southern California. And the thing about that is, like, if you're listening to the radio or watching television, inevitably, if you're just flipping through the channels, you're going to come across a Spanish-speaking station, which is great. The only problem is, no habla. I don't speak Spanish. And so you know what doesn't help me? When I turn it up. I don't know if other people who speak other languages are as bad about this as English-speaking people are, but we think that if you can't understand what you're saying, what's going to fix it is if we speak louder and slower I said, can you tell me how to get to the bathroom? Where? No habla, you know, and it doesn't help to turn it up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, God no habla worry. He no habla fear. He no habla doubt. He habla faith. That's what God speaks. He has spoken to you from his word, and he is waiting on a response of faith. Faith is the only appropriate response to God's grace. And if he calls you loved, the response is, well, I don't feel loved. That's not the right response. That's not the response. The response is not, how could you love me? I'm unworthy, blah, blah. That's not the right response. The right response is, if you call me loved, I am loved. If he calls you healed, the right response is not, I don't feel healed. No, the right response is faith. You call me healed, I am healed. You get your life changed in this conversation. Amen. I'm Jeremy. It's good to meet you guys. We are so blessed, honored, thrilled to be here today. Thank you, Dr. Henry, Jackie. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to meet you all and your family. Do you guys know Joey and Kirsten? Does everybody know Joey and Kirsten? So Joey and Kirsten live down in Texas. We hang out with them quite a bit. And we like Joey a lot. We love Kirsten. We love both those guys so much. I don't know what it is. And I'll just say this on a personal level here, personal opinion. Of all the accents in the world, South African is my favorite. It's just my absolute favorite. I know, I wouldn't just say that anywhere. I mean it. My junior year in high school, this guy moved from Johannesburg. He and his family moved to Fort Worth to be a part of my parents' church, and we were in the same year in school, and we became just the greatest friends, best friends. And I've spent so much time at his house, and I just felt like an honorary South African. I mean, I ate pabudi. Am I saying that? Yeah, everybody's like, you ate what now? But it's a lot of rice and I think some raisins and stuff. Anyway, meat. We had a lot of meat, but all that to say, I just absolutely love the culture, love the people, and it's something about the accent. I could just listen to it all the time. And I used to call my friend's house, and mom would pick up, and we had the same little short conversation every time I called. She'd say, hello. And I'd say, hi, Mrs. Kinney, this is Jeremy. How are you, sir? And I'd say, fun and you. Joey told me, he said, now when you get there, you need to greet them all with this Afrikaans word. And it's literally the only Afrikaans word that I know. And I know for a fact it's a cuss word. And so I told you, I was like, yeah, right, Joey. I'm not getting up there and saying that. That fella just tried to hang me out to dry. No, thank you. But we are so blessed and honored to be here. How many of you can come tonight? I'm excited about tonight. This morning, but tonight, we're going to have a good time today. It's going to be wonderful. I really enjoyed the praise and worship. Can we just give those guys a wonderful hand? It's outstanding. Really, really just fresh and anointed. Thank you so much. We get to travel. We're traveling all the time, Sarah and I. We're in churches across the United States, around the world, and you guys are blessed. I'll just say that. You're blessed. You're blessed to have a level of excellence and a level of integrity and honor and purity. That's not everywhere, and that's not a judgment of anybody else, but I think you ought to know how blessed that you are. And I know we're in Southern California. I apologize for the fancy clothes this morning. We have been here over a week now. Our whole trip started in San Francisco last Saturday, and we were preaching up there, did a couple of services, then drove down to Carmel, and then did the long drive from there down to Marietta, where we ministered a few days ago, and then made our way down to San Diego yesterday. So all that to say, I'm scraping the bottom of the suitcase right now. This shirt has been worn a number of times. This is a good distance for us right now. But my wife leaned over this morning and told me how handsome she thought I was, which I know she meant hot, but she said handsome. So that's all that's important. Did you bring a Bible with you today? Go with me to the book of Romans chapter 4. I believe the Lord has good things for us this morning. You can find Romans chapter 4, and if you want to, you can also find Psalm 27. We'll go there next. Romans chapter 4. One of my favorite places, Romans 4, Romans 5, all these chapters right here in a row together. You ought to just take some time and really jump into these because they're just so full of life and full of truth. I heard one guy say one time, I don't do drugs, I do Romans 5. I kind of feel the same way about some of these verses here. But in Romans chapter 4, the New Testament account of the life of an Old Testament guy named Abraham. But there were some things about his life that we had to understand when it came to living and walking by faith. And I want to center in here on a couple of different verses. Just start in verse 16, and we'll read a few verses here. Romans chapter 4, verse 16, it says, therefore it is of faith that it might be according to grace. So you already see we're talking here about the conversation between grace and faith. So that the promise, be a good church name, might be sure to all the seed, not only to those who are of the law, but also to those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, I've made you a father of many nations in the presence of him whom he believed, God, who gives life to the dead and calls those things which do not exist as though they did. Verse 18, who contrary to hope, the word hope just means expectation. We use the word hope in our vernacular and our culture a little differently than the Bible does. Hope for us just a lot of times equates to wishing. I wish we could. I hope we can means I wish we could maybe. But hope in Bible context means an earnest, a fervent, a red hot expectation. An expectation of what will be. And this says in verse 18, who contrary to hope, in hope believe. So in other words, when Abraham had no natural reason to expect what God had promised to come true, still he expected. That's what this phrase means, who contrary to hope, in hope believed. When there was no natural reason to expect the child that God had promised, still he expected one. He couldn't expect it based on his age. He couldn't expect it based on his wife's age. He certainly couldn't expect it based on any experience that they'd had with any kids because they had none. So most people live a life of expectation based on either where they've been or where they are now. That's what determines the expectation. Keep this in mind because this is what we're going to talk some more about. Who contrary to hope, in hope believes, so that he became the father of many nations according to what was written, so shall your descendants be. Notice this in verse 19. Not being weak in faith, he did not consider his own body already dead since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb. So to be weak in faith would be to consider these things, to take account, not just to think about them in a passing sense, but to consider, like look intently, I think one translation says. He did not look intently at his own age. He didn't look intently at what the scriptures called the deadness of Sarah's womb. Had he been looking intently at those things, focusing on the natural outward elements of this situation, his faith would have been so weak and it wouldn't have produced anything. In verse 20, it said, he didn't waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded. Man, I like that. I like that. Over these last several years, that's become one of my favorite, I don't know, terminologies in scriptures, fully persuaded. Fully persuaded. I think about when Paul got hauled before King Agrippa, and man, he just preached his guts out to him, preached the gospel to him, told him what Jesus had done and what Jesus had accomplished. And King Agrippa looked back at Paul and said, wow, Paul, you almost persuade me. Almost persuaded. Almost. Somebody say almost. Almost. My grandfather is a pilot. He's flown airplanes for a long time. Been in the ministry 50 years, but been flying airplanes even longer than that. And he's got another friend in ministry, a guy named Jesse Duplantis. Maybe some of you know of him. Well, Jesse doesn't fly airplanes. He flies in them. His ministry owns one. But he doesn't fly them. He came to my grandfather one day and said, Brother Copeland, guess what? I can almost land my airplane. Evidently, his pilots had kind of let him sit up there and, you know, taught him a few things. I can almost land my airplane. My grandfather looked back at him and said, Jesse, that's crashing. Almost landing is the exact same thing as what? Crashing. Not landing. Not landing. I mean, how confident would you be to be sitting in the back of an airplane on an airliner and your pilot comes on and says, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot speaking, and I just want to let you know we'll be flying at an altitude of 32,000 feet today. We're going to fly around some weather and we'll be descending over into the Southern California area. And good news, I can almost land. Almost land. Why wouldn't that comfort you? Because almost landing is the exact same thing as not landing. So what is almost persuaded? It's the exact same thing as not persuaded. Not persuaded. And that's what happened to the children of Israel. We know from the book of Hebrews that says they did not enter into God's rest because of unbelief. Other translations say an unpersuadableness. They refused to be persuaded that what God had for them, they were able to take it, that they were able to receive it. They just could not. I almost said they couldn't believe it, but it wasn't they couldn't, they wouldn't, because that's a choice. They refused to be persuaded, but not Abraham. Abraham was fully persuaded, like all the way there. I like that. We are the fully persuaded. I think if I had a band, that's what I would call us. The fully persuaded. You know, I just like it. I like the idea, the sound of that. That's the way I want to live my life. Absolutely convinced that God is who he said he is. He'd do what he said he would do. He's faithful when he made his promise. He was fully persuaded that he who promised was faithful. He was able to perform it. Therefore, it was accounted to him for righteousness. But go back to what we read in verse 19 here. He wasn't weak in faith. What did verse 20 say? He was strengthened in faith. So not weak in faith, but he was strong in faith. It's possible to be weak in faith. But if it's possible to be weak, you know it's also possible to be strong. Now just pop quiz here for a minute. What's better, weaker or stronger? No, you're reading this out of the Bible, and that's obviously the answer. But I mean it. Think about it for a second. In any area of life, what's better, weaker or stronger? Stronger's better. You know that. What's better? Not just weak or strong in faith, but apply this on more of a natural level. What's better, to be weaker physically or stronger physically? Right, stronger. What about, how about in your immune system? Would you rather have a weaker immune system or a stronger? What's better, weaker or stronger? Stronger is better. What about mentally? Huh? Is it better to be mentally weaker or mentally stronger? Stronger in every area of your life. Here's one. What about financially?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, that's
when that religion starts talking. But you know that weaker is not as good as stronger. Stronger is better than weaker in every area of your life. So what's better, to be weaker financially or stronger financially? Stronger. Stronger is better than weaker in every area of life, with the exception of certain smells. Stronger is always better than weaker. Always. But go to Psalm 27, and I want you to see this. Of all these areas that we've just talked about, physically, mentally, you could add emotionally, you could add relationally, all these areas of your life where stronger could be better or is better than weaker. I want you to hear what the psalmist says here in Psalm 27. Look at verse 13. He said, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Now notice what he says in verse 14. Wait on the Lord. be of good courage, and he will, what? Strengthen your heart. He will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. So of all these areas of life, both physically and naturally and spiritually, all these arenas of life were stronger's better than weaker. If you had to ask me, I would say this is the most important one of them all. To be strong in your heart. Nothing is more important than a strong heart. It's more important to be strong in your heart than it is to be strong physically. It's more important to be strong in your heart than it is to be strong financially. It's more important to be strong in your heart than any of these other areas. Why? Because a strong heart will get you through weakness in any time. I mean, you ask any coach, any self-respecting coach, and especially one that has any level of success, and you ask him this, I'll give you a choice between two guys. One's got talent, one's got heart. Which one do you want? Every time, a coach is going to say, give me heart. Right? Am I right about that? Give me heart. I want heart. That's what a coach wants on the team. That's what God's looking for in us. Give me heart. What happened when Samuel went to anoint the next king out of the house of Jesse? And that first dude showed up. And he was tall, and he was strong, and he was good looking, right? And Samuel said, this must be the one. And God said, no. Why? Because you're looking on the outward appearance, but I don't see as man sees, he said. I look at the heart. So this is what he's after, not just a heart, but a strong heart. The scripture says that the strong spirit of a man will sustain him in bodily pain and in trouble. You could be failing, you could be weak in every other area of your life, but if you've got a strong heart, you can make it all the way through it. You could be weak physically, body just riddled with pain, sickness, disease, symptoms from head to toe. But if you've got a strong heart, a heart that will hold on to the word of God, a heart that will receive his promise, a heart that won't quit, you can make it all the way through that without giving up, without giving in. And that's what David said here. He said, I would have lost heart. That means I would have given up, because the big problem here is once you've lost heart, you're done. Once you've run out of heart, you are done. Game over. Lights out. It's finished. And he said, I would have lost heart. The pressure must have been so intense. It must have been so strong around him that it was trying to get him to give up, give in, and quit. Just lose heart. And he said, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord. See, this is what makes us, I'll just say it, strange. This is what makes us so strange and so different from the rest of this world. Because everybody else, their perseverance is totally dependent upon what they see. I'm giving up unless I see some change. I'm bailing on this marriage unless I see some change. I'm quitting on this job unless I start to see some change. That's how just everybody lives their life, but this is what makes you and me strange. This is what makes us different. We don't have to see it. All we have to do is believe to see it. All we have to do is keep a heart that's strong enough to believe to see something else. We're not waiting on something to show up on the outside first. It's like Abraham. I'm not looking intently at the outward appearance of it. I'm not studying the natural condition of it. I'm believing, I'm expecting, I'm hoping to see something else, the goodness of God. I don't care what it looks like around me right now. I don't care what it feels like. I don't care what I feel like. I am believing to see the goodness of the Lord right now in the land of the living. And it was believing that that sustained him. And I like verse 13 because this is him saying, this is what I've dealt with and went through. And then he turns around here in verse 14. He's saying, so here my advice to you based on what I've experienced is just wait on the Lord. Be patient. That word wait also means to expect. I'm talking to you this morning about your expectation. I guess if we were going to call this message something, maybe call it stronger is better than weaker. But I was thinking about just asking you this question. What did you expect? What did you expect? Because whatever you're in right now, we could go back in time a little bit and find out what you were expecting. What did you expect? And however you want it to be on down the road, you need to start changing your expectation right now to line up with that. What did you expect? Wait, I say, on the Lord. Be of good courage, and He will strengthen your heart. Go to the book of Luke and look at what Jesus said. You don't really hear pages turn in church anymore. It's just silent tapping on the screens of phones. I miss that sound. Matthew, Mark, Luke, it used to be in here. Where did it go? Luke chapter 21. Notice something Jesus said here in verse 25 and 26. He said, There will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars on the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. Look at what he said in verse 26. Men's hearts failing them. What's failing them? Their heart. The heart's given up. The heart's quitting. Why? From fear and the expectation of those things which are coming. Why are men's hearts failing? Fear and expectation. Do you see these two things coming together here? Fear and expectation. Well, fear has an expectation, but so does faith. That's what these two things are. They are both expectations. As a matter of fact, your life and mine, we're all built on one of these two platforms. Your life is either built on the platform of faith or it's built on the platform of fear. Faith yields an expectation called hope. Fear, on the other hand, yields an expectation called worry. That's what worry is. It's the expectation of bad. I'm worried that this is how it's going to turn out. I'm worried that it's going to be this way. I'm worried that it's not going to change. I'm worried that we're not going to have enough. That's an expectation, and it's the expectation of bad. A life built on the platform of fear yields an expectation called worry. But a life built on the platform of faith yields an expectation called hope. I'm expecting it to turn around. I'm expecting my body to change. I'm expecting my finances to increase. I'm expecting this. What did you expect? Because this is what I'm expecting. And Jesus said men's hearts are going to either quit or keep going based on the expectation. So your heart's going to be either strengthened or it's going to be weakened based entirely on what you expect to happen. I was just last year, Sarah and I were really believing God for some things in our ministry, particularly for our travel. Like I said to you a moment ago, we spend a great deal of our time traveling. I think we're at this point already in the year on the calendar for this year, we've got 30 something trips that we're taking. One to South Africa, one to the UK, Canada, and across the United States. When we started our ministry, it'd be 7 years ago this year, just a few months after we started, there was a man that called us and said, I want to give you an airplane. Anybody ever had that happen? Oh man, it's awesome. You gotta try that. It's great. This man, who said that? I'm expecting. There you go. Thank you. This man called us. We had been using his airplane, said, I want to give it to you. We're just a few months old in our ministry, and the Lord gave us an airplane. Great airplane. Cessna 421 twin engine, man. We flew that thing all over the United States. A couple of years after that, another minister called and gave us a jet. Citation 500, faster, higher, further. Awesome, man. You know what we did? We turned around and gave away that first airplane. We sewed that one into another ministry. And if you've never given away an airplane, that's fun. You gotta try that. That's a blast. You make somebody cry when you do that. That is fun. And then maybe a year or two after that, the Lord dealt with us to take that jet that we had and sew it into another ministry. And so we did. We were excited about it. And we were just a few years old. The Lord had already given our ministry. This is this little ministry, two different airplanes. And so we thought, well, we're going to sew this one. And that next one is just going to land in our lap. That's going to be great. Well, you know what? Time went by and time went by and time went by. We're believing God for this next airplane because the Lord had delivered us out of the commercial airline system, which was a wonderful exodus. I mean, that was miraculous. And he talked to us about it. He said, I want you to quit depending on them to help you do what I've called you to do. So that was a personal thing that he dealt with us on. And so we stepped out of that. But you know, when we gave that airplane away, we still had trips we had to take. So we started flying commercial again. And I don't know how long went by, another year, maybe more. And we're believing God, expecting our airplane. And we were having a conversation last summer. We were out of town, actually staying at Sarah's parents' house in Missouri. And she said something to me, and I knew it was right. She said, Jeremy, do you think us having this airplane or not having it has something to do with God telling you to go back to flight school? See, when I was a senior in high school, my grandfather, who I mentioned to you, flown airplanes for a long time, came to me and said, Jeremy, how would you like to go to flight school? How'd you like to get your pilot's license? Now, that side of my family, real adventurous, speed freaks. You know, my grandfather's always said, what did he say? It's like, if it's not going Mach 2 with your hair on fire, he's not interested in it. He just loves going fast, just wants to go fast. I was never really like that. That side of my family, they were the outdoor guys. You know, they rode motorcycles and flew airplanes and killed stuff in the woods and that kind of thing. I was never really that into that. My dad came from the Northeast. He was born and raised in Massachusetts and went to the Massachusetts Conservatory of Music. And so that influence on my life, while my uncles and cousins were killing deers in the woods, I was learning Beatles songs on the piano. That was really what I identified with more. And I was more in the music and creative arts and that kind of thing. So when my grandfather comes to me and says, do you want to learn to fly? To be honest with you, I had a little bit of fear about it. Not a little bit. I was afraid. But maybe some of you know my grandfather, Kenneth Copeland. One of the things you don't say is, no, I'm afraid that I'm not going to do that. So when he says, do you want to learn to fly? I'm sitting there going, yay. That sounds great. You know, so he gets me enrolled in flight school as a senior in high school. And while most young guys, I think, would really love the opportunity to do this, I was thankful for it. And, I, you know, on one hand, I thought it was cool. But almost right away, it didn't take. Like, I was having a really hard time just comprehending, like, basic concepts of flight and how to do this the right way and just understanding it. It just seemed confusing to me. But I stuck with it a little bit. After about 20 hours of flight instruction, it comes time for your first solo. Does anybody know what solo means? It means you're in an airplane by yourself, alone. And I had to do my first solo, but the first solo, they keep it simple. All you have to do is take off, do one trip around the pattern, fly to pattern altitude, make your crosswind, downwind, base, and final leg, all that stuff. Come in, touch the ground, do it, take off again, touch and go. You do that 2 or 3 times, and you're done. Simple enough, right? Well, we fly out to my grandparents' ministry, and there's a runway there on property. My instructor gets out of the airplane. My family's standing out there watching. I take off, come around, didn't even make it to the ground the first time. I don't know what was going on. Like, this doesn't look right. Something doesn't feel right. So I just go around the second time, determined to actually make contact with the earth again. I said, I am going to land this airplane. And I came down. I kid you not. I landed that airplane so hard. It bounced off the runway, back into the air, bounced again, bounced like a ball that had just been thrown from heaven all the way down that runway. It was not good. And I got to do this two more times. So I take off again, and I think it was on the second time around or the third when the second landing was a little better, maybe on the third pass around, I look out the window, and there's a fire truck pulling up onto the airport property. So all these thoughts are racing through my mind, and I'm thinking, now either somebody saw the first landing and decided we better get some help out here, or somebody lacked such confidence in me that they preemptively called a fire truck for me to come do my first solo. Either way, it just drains my confidence entirely. But whatever, I land the airplane, it was fine. Well, they weren't great landings, but I walked away. And so I was thankful to be walking away. Continued with the training. Shortly after you do your pattern solo, you do a few more hours of training, then you've got to do a cross-country solo. Cross-country solo, technically speaking, it has to be one or more legs of 50 nautical miles in distance. And then you have to do a touch-and-go at another airport and come back to base. So many cross-country solos are a trip here out to this airport, another airport, and then you come back home. I was so not confident in my ability as a pilot that I found an airport that was 51 nautical miles away from the base where I was taking my lessons, located on the exact same highway that my airport was on. So I essentially would take off from that airport, look out the window the entire time, and as long as I could see that highway beneath me, I knew I was in the right spot. I basically drove that airplane from this airport down here to this one 51 nautical miles away and back. And I did those as my cross-country solos, and I probably did that two or three times. But at one point, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to eventually fly an airplane to a different airport than that one. So I thought, I'm going to do this for real this time. This is going to be legit. I took off. I was headed for another airport. Half hour into the flight, lost. Just lost. And if you've never been lost while flying an airplane, then you've never sweat. That was the most intense sweat I've ever had in my life. And it's not like you're going to pull over, you know what I mean? Excuse me. Can you tell me how to get back to the highway? That would have been great if I could do that. But there's nobody else up there. And, you know, by the grace of God and some help from air traffic control, I made it back home. Never found the airports I was supposed to go to. Landed the airplane, came back in. My instructor's waiting there for me. How'd it go? Fine. Speed walked straight to the car. Get in the car and drive away. So shook me up. Just really rattled my cage. Not long after that, I just kind of quit altogether. A couple of years later, I decided, you know, I need to probably go back and pick this thing up again and finish what I started. So a buddy of mine and I, actually my South African friend, we moved out to a town a couple hours east of where we lived there in Fort Worth, and we went to flight school together. And this was like full-time flight school. We're trying to get our instrument rating and all that kind of thing, and getting our private pilot's license. And I got another instructor. This guy was from India and spoke with such a thick Indian accent. And you add on top of that, you're in this little noisy airplane you can hardly hear, and he's shouting instruction that you're in. Why don't you turn and let it die? And I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying. And he's yelling at me, use some common sense. And I'm like, driving is common sense. This is not common sense to anybody. Leave me alone. I want out of this airplane. I stuck with it. I got my private pilot's license. A little bit after that, I got my instrument license. But, you know, I just never had that confidence I was looking for. I just kept making mistakes and stuff that just, it felt like I'd take a step forward and a couple of steps back. And then I got my multi-engine rating. But my check ride for my multi-engine instrument license was the last time I've flown an airplane. And that was back in 2002. And I just decided, I'm just not cut out for this. I just don't really want to do this. And then you fast forward all these years later. What are we talking about? Sarah. 15 years later. And Sarah says to me, Do you think the Lord having this next airplane for us has anything to do with you going back? Well, see, the Lord had already been talking to me about it. He'd already been dealing with me about going back to flight school. But sometimes you kind of reason your way out of these things, or you reason yourself into believing that's not really God. I knew it was God, and I just flat told him no. I want you to go back and pick up your training. No. And she starts talking to me about it and says, do you think it has anything to do with him telling you to fly again? And I was like, yes. Yeah, it does. Okay, fine. No, and it did. But I finally called myself on it. And I said, you want to know why I don't want to go back and do this again? I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid of being the guy in the front. I'm afraid of being the guy up there with my family in the back. I'm afraid. And it was a moment of honesty for me. You know, our pastor says it like this: God will meet you where you are, but not where you pretend to be. Isn't that good? He'll meet you where you are, but not where you pretend to be. And that's where I was. I was afraid. Now, one thing about growing up in the house of faith, you can call yourself on the fear, but don't you dare continue to live there. I knew enough to not allow that fear to keep me from being obedient. But see, many people refuse to step out into what God's called them to do, refuse to step out into their calling out of fear. And the more I think about this, the more I realize it's all based on the expectation. There are people who won't step out in obedience because they think there's no way that it will be any better. Based on what they're in right now, based on the experience they have in the past, what reason do they have to believe that the future is going to be any better than this? And that's where most of the world lives life, right there. Thinking back on the children of Israel, when God said, this is the land, I'm giving it to you, go spy it out. And they came home. What they tell Moses? They said, yeah, it's beautiful. Flows with milk and honey. Problem is, they said, there's really tall people that live there. And they've got these walls. But you know what they said? You can read about it in the book of Numbers, chapter 12, 13, 14. They said, they're strong. And they're stronger than us. So in their eyes, they were weak. But I like this guy, Caleb. Because it says in the Bible that Caleb quieted all the people before Moses. Shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. You know, sometimes you got to do that with your own fear and the voice of doubt, the voice of unbelief. Shut up, just shut up. He quieted all the people. And you know what he said? He said, let's go right now. Because we are well able to overtake it. But these people wouldn't hear it. They wouldn't have it. They said, no, we're like grasshoppers in their sight and in ours. And they wouldn't go. They refused to go take it. And you remember God's response to it. He said, none of y'all are going in. I have had it with the lot of you. Then he said, except that guy Caleb. He said, there's a different spirit in him. There's a spirit of courage. There's something different in him. God will meet you where you are, but not where you pretend to be. And that was a moment of honesty for me. I'm afraid. Sarah, I'm afraid. But the more we talked together, the more we prayed together about it, the more I realized I cannot let fear keep me out of this. What I was doing was allowing my experience to shape my expectation. I was allowing experience to dictate expectation. That's where most everybody lives. It won't be better because it's never been better before. And if they're not living there, there are many people who are, but based on all appearances, living a good life, living a rich life, living a happy life. And yet God's calling, okay, leave it all. Take a step of faith. Sow it all. Take a step of faith. Come on, follow me, follow me, follow me. And he's calling you out over that, what Dr. Lillian B. Yeoman called that aching void. She said, God delights in his children stepping out over the aching void with nothing beneath their feet but his word. He loves it. God has no problem whatsoever putting you in a position that will require faith. And he's saying, come on, come on. But people refuse to take that step out, not because it is bad or has been bad, but because they believe it couldn't be better. How could it get better than this, they say. So you got people stuck thinking it won't be better, and you got other people stuck thinking it couldn't be better. They're both wrong. They're both a wrong expectation. I didn't want to go fly again based on my experience of the past, thinking it won't be any better. But you know, the same week that she and I came into agreement and said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do what it takes for me to fly again, get back into my training. A family friend of ours came to us and said, Jeremy, I believe the Lord wants you to fly again. He's an instructor. He's a bit older than me. He's Gold Star instructor, thousands of hours instructing. He said, I want to do this for you for free. I want to instruct you. Okay, Lord, I get it. I get it. You know, back in August of last year, I went back and got in the airplane with him. And can I tell you something? From the time we fired up that engine on that little Cessna 172, the joy of the Lord came all over me. And from the very moment we taxied that thing out to the runway, I thought, this is fun. I'm actually enjoying this. Let me tell you what was happening. I took a step of courage, and as soon as I did, he came and strengthened my heart. That's what I needed. It wasn't that I lacked any mental capacity to do it. I mean, when I was going through flight school all those years ago with my buddy, my South African friend out there in Texas, we were going through flight school, and when it was hard, we used to look at each other all the time and say, you know what? Of all the millions and millions and millions of people that have done this, surely we are not the dumbest ones. There's no way. There's no way. We're probably not even top 10 dumbest. We can do this. So it wasn't that I lacked something mentally. I wasn't too weak mentally to do it. I wasn't too weak physically to do it, but I was weak in my heart. And as soon as I took that step of faith, I took the courage, like David said, be of good courage, and he'll strengthen your heart. You find the courage, here comes the strength. He strengthened my heart. And we were flying together. I was flying with this instructor. He said, man, you're doing great. This is all coming right back to you. You're a great pilot. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? He said, you're doing an awesome job. Oh, yeah, this is so natural, so smooth. He had great compliments. And we flew together, I don't know, half a dozen times, just getting instruction. He took me out to the airport. I remember the one I told you where I did the solo at, out there at my grandparents' property. He said, hey, I want you to pull up to the hangar there. I got to run in for a second. Okay. We pull up to the hangar. He's like, actually, I'm going in. You're going solo. I said, you jerk. My first solo in 15, 16 years. He says, yeah, just go out there, do 2-3 landings, come on back. And as soon as he got out of the airplane, I just lifted my voice to the Lord. I said, okay, Lord, it's me and you now. The peace of God came all over me. The joy of the Lord came all over me. I did 3 of the most beautiful landings you have ever seen in your life. You know the sound? You know the sound that an airplane makes when it's landed perfectly? That, you've been in an airplane before? Just try it with me. It's just perfect. It's beautiful. I did 3 of those. It's great. And it was such a testimony to me to be doing solos at the same airport all these years later, like a different guy sitting there. This one had a strong heart. And she and I have so much more confidence now when it comes to believing God for this next airplane. You're saying, you got it, right? Oh, we are close. We are close. But see, the confidence for my faith has come up because whereas before I'm believing God, believing for this airplane, believing for this airplane, your confidence can't be there if he's told you to do something about it that you refuse to do out of fear. You're not in faith if you're in fear. But my expectation has changed. My expectation has changed. Amen. I have it in my heart this morning that He wants to strengthen your heart today. Because of anything you want, strengthen any area of your life, it's this right here. You want a strong heart. Amen. How did David say to get it? Wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. That's not arms folded, foot tapping, just waiting on you, God. That's not what that's about. Wait. Expect. It's through faith and patience that you inherit the promise. Expect to see the goodness of God in your life. Change your expectation. Have you seen bad days? That doesn't mean you have to expect more bad days. Have you seen good days? That doesn't mean you have to expect that this is as good as they'll ever be. Doesn't matter what you've seen. Doesn't matter where you've been. If you've got God and you've got His Word, you've got enough to change and shape your expectation of the future. I expect to see the goodness of God here and now in the land of the living. Have you been through some junk in relationships? Don't expect that the next one's going to be that just because you've been there before. Expect to see the goodness of God in your relationship. Expect to see the goodness of God in your marriage. Maybe it's been a dozen years of heartache and pain. Well, change your expectation. I expect to see God's goodness in this marriage. I expect to see a manifestation of Jesus in our relationship. I expect to see God's goodness poured out on me in my finances and material. Yeah, well, I've never seen that before. I don't have a rich grandpa. I don't come from rich family. Doesn't matter where you've seen, what you've seen or where you've been. Change your expectation now of where you're headed. Get it in your heart, coming out of your mouth. And He will strengthen your heart. Amen. Thank you, Lord. Pastor, come on up.